18 in the lesson this morning, and we're going to begin to look at the world as God sees it, and what he helped the Apostle Paul to see by going out of the world and preaching to. And it seems to me that there were different categories that people found themselves in, but we all, no matter what walk of life we're in, whether we're out in the world, as I tell people, I used to be a heathen. I didn't know anything about God. And so I just walked around, and I knew there was a God. I always knew that, but I didn't give God what belonged to him, didn't give him the honor and the glory that he deserved. And so we're going to look at the Gentile world in the 18th verse and running down to the end of this chapter and see what kind of a mess people can make and what is God's response to that, and really to answer some questions. I so often talk to people, and they say, well, if there's a God in heaven who cares and a loving God and a compassionate God, how can he sit still up in the heavens and not do anything when all this wickedness is in the world? And I tell people, God is doing something. Sometimes sitting still and letting people make a mess and let them do what they want to do and go their own way when you can't change them, and let them see what that does, cause them to hate what they are. I know, because I'm a good example of it. I did what was wrong, and I just got sick of myself and sick of my life, and I finally, that's what got me turned around. So I can see why the apostle would write and tell us, by the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, this world that he's preaching to, when he would say in the first chapter of Romans, in verse 1, here he says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who hold the truth in unrighteousness." Now, this word "hold the truth" means to suppress it. It means to take something that you know and you sense and you see, and you just try to hold that down. You don't want it, so you try to step on it, hold it back, and suppress it because it will bother you. I tell people, I met a fellow in England, and he told me he was an atheist. And I asked him, I said, "Well, I'm curious about that." I said, "I'm a Christian." And I said, "I want to know why you are an atheist." And I said, "What is it that appeals to you about atheism?" He said, "Well, actually, nothing in atheism appeals to me." And I said, "Well, then why are you an atheist?" Well, he said, "Well, I'll tell you why I'm an atheist." He said, "If I were to start being like you and start thinking that there is a God and start thinking about, well, you know, God, if he made me, I owe him something. I ought to pay attention to him. And if God has spoke to me, and I know you're going to tell me the Bible is God speaking to me," he said, "that would mean I'd have to spend time reading my Bible. And I'd read my Bible, I'd start seeing I was doing things that are wrong. And I'd start changing. I'd start going to church. And then I'd be going to church every Sunday. And then I'd be taking my time doing that. And I'd be into doing all these things." And he said, "I just don't want that." I said, "You mean to tell me you're an atheist just because you don't want to know and do what God said?" He said, "Yeah." I thought, there's an honest person, you know. Well, when you look at what we see here, here were people who were living in the world. And what we see is that God has made himself known. We're going to see that clearly here. And what we see about that is that God is very angry. God has a wrath. If we don't do what we were designed to do, God is angry about that. God's bothered by that. It's a serious matter. And you think about the series of what can happen to you at the end of the road, if there is a God, that I believe there is, and if God has spoken to you, and I believe he has, and then you reject that and you don't do what God says. Can you imagine what God can do and what can happen if God says to you, "Depart from me into everlasting darkness, into punishment prepared for the devil and his angels"? For you, for that to happen to you, that can happen to you. And so we need to see how serious sin is that God would tell us something like that. But now notice he says in verse 19, here's the trouble, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Now notice the writer says, when you think about what's happening, is that first of all, God has given revelation. God's made himself known. And you can look at all the things around you. It's just a marvel when you look at how many things in the world. I was in Zimbabwe years ago, and they had this weaver bird, a bird that the snakes will get up in a tree and get birds' eggs. And so the weaver bird has designed a nest where you fly in up through the bottom of it, and he weaves this nest into a tree, And so he puts his eggs up in there on a shelf in that nest. And so when the snakes try to get in there and crawl in, they end up falling down. They can't get up in there. And so some atheist said, well, you know, I'll tell you that the reason that is that that bird just teaches the next bird how to do it. And so that's nothing about God designing a bird to do that. It's just to learn what you learn from your mother and your father. And so they decided that they would prove this atheist to be wrong by taking the eggs of these weaver birds and putting them in a nest and letting them be born and leave them in an area where they would not see other weaver birds. And so they had a limb out there where they could build a nest. And so you know what those weaver birds did? They built the exact same nest that all of. What makes that? Well, God has given instinct. God has made things. God has designed things. And he's put inside of us, Ecclesiastes 3 verse 11, eternity. There's something inside of all of us. And is it amazing to you that these anthropologists and other people who go around the world and study human history, they will dig up the remains and the things that people have done hundreds and thousands of years ago, and they find out everywhere they go that somehow, for some reason, men, if they don't know God, they try to make one. It's a marvel. There's something about people who just know within themselves there's got to be a God. And so every civilization you look at somewhere along the way, well, how crazy it might be in their ignorance, they try to find that. And so the writer's saying, let me tell you, you can look around and see not only what's inside of you, because God's put eternity in you, a longing to want to know and to find out about a God. But here's the ideal of people who they know and they sense and they see, but what's the trouble? They don't want to know it. They suppress it. And so he says to us, when God made this known, he showed it to them, and it's clearly seen. I mean, you don't have to be a genius to figure out, but looking around you, all the order and all the design of the way things work, those things being understood by the things that are seen, that are made, even his eternal power, and you think about that for a minute or two, when you look at this vast universe that we live in, I mean, it's a marvel to me. Get out in the nighttime and just sit and look at the stars and see a shooting star go across and then sometimes be way out in the country and to see the Milky Way. See this vast, all these stars, you get way out in the country sometime and you can't do it in the city, but you can see this vast star galaxy that we're a part of. And then to realize that is just a small speck of what in the world is out there. And then to think that I'm down here on this little bitty globe, this little bitty ant walking around in this little bitty space here, and know that God has made all of that, and this watch is working perfect time. I don't have to adjust it every day of the week. We're spinning around this way. We're moving at 1,000 miles an hour. I mean, there's 2,500 miles around the earth, and we're every 24 hours, we're spinning around. And then we're taking off, and we're going around this way, going around the sun, you see. And so here we are going, moving around all the, and here this watch is keeping time of it every day. You mean to tell me it's accidental? Or is this watch a miracle, you know? Can we see, when you look at the pattern and the design, the order of everything about your human eye. You know, you think about a camera that has living color and it's automatically self-adjusting. But, you know, I took a camera a couple years ago over to Sierra Leone, and one of the young preachers wanted to borrow it, and he took my camera and he took a picture and he dropped it. And it hit on a rock and busted the front off of it. Well, I tried my best to stick it and glue it and twist it to get it to work. That camera couldn't heal itself for nothing under the sun. But you know, I've shot a piece of plastic into my eye, went all the way back and about punched a hole in the back of my retina, my eye, and I could see a shadow of something in there, and light was flashing at night when I go by cars. I thought I was losing my mind. I went to an eye doctor. He said, you just about blinded yourself. He said, there's something all the way back in the back. So the only way I can do is go through the back of your head almost to get to it. You might as well just leave it now. But I want you to know my eye, it's working fine today. I can see just fine. I no longer even see that shadow anymore. This camera that God made is self-adjusting, living color, and even heals itself. You don't have to go to a repair shop and get the thing fixed when something happens to it. Now, you can get that done nowadays. But think about the amazing the marvel of what God, we're fearfully and wonderfully made. And the writer says, when you look at all that, what you sense and see is that this couldn't have happened by, I've seen several explosions. Matter of fact, I experienced one of them in the country a few years ago. I poured some gasoline on the ground, tried to burn this big brush pile, and it didn't work. I thought, well, I'll go get some more gas. So I went up to the barn, got a big old gallon of gasoline, got up on top of the pile, and I thought, I'll soak it down. And I started pouring that gas out. Well, my brother was standing off behind me, Shannon, and all of a sudden, whoom, I heard a flash, and I saw this red light go off, and I, what? And I thought my brother had kicked me in the britches, knocked me off in the wood pile. Well, explosions don't give order and design, you know what I mean? And they terrify you, and they make a mess out of everything. But here's a picture of what God has done. And so the writer would say to us, God has made himself known, revealed himself to us. But now notice what happens here in verse 21. Because when they knew God, and notice they knew, it wasn't that they didn't know. Now, they're not going to be judged. People say, what about all these people out in the world that are completely ignorant? They've never known a thing about God. Let me tell you, everybody knows something about God. And whatever you know, whatever you can figure out, you are going to be held accountable for. So don't think, well, I'm going to say, God, I just didn't know. I was so ignorant about this. I didn't know a thing. You dummy. I shouldn't say that. But you crazy thing, don't you know you can sense and see? And so the writer says to us, because that when they had this evidence, and they didn't, because when they knew God, they glorified not. You see what the problem is? My friend in England, see, he knew, well, I'm going to have to go to church. I'm going to have to sing songs. I'm going to have to study my Bible. I'm going to start praying. They don't want that, so they don't give God the glory and the honor that he deserves. And notice it says, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful. And you think about that for a minute or two. Have you ever had somebody, even in traffic, when somebody was in traffic, all was trying to get in one line, and I stop and let somebody over, you know what I expect out of the person? I expect a little gratitude, don't you? You give somebody something. Have you ever given, when I help somebody do something like that, one time I've told about a fellow who was stuck off in the edge of the road in the snow, and I had a four-wheel drive truck, and my sons and I would get out when it was snow bad and help people, and so we got out, and this old boy said, I'm stuck, can you possibly, we'd be glad to help you. And he said, well, I got all kind of problems. I said, what's the matter? He said, well, when I got stuck, he said, I kept spinning the tires, and so then I ran out of gas, and so I'm out of gas. I said, well, I got a gas can in the back. We'll go get you some gas. He said, well, that's not all. I said, what? He said, my battery. After I ran out of gas, I ran my battery all the way down trying to start my car again. And so he said, now I've got a dead battery. I said, well, I got some jumper cables in the truck. We'll take care of it. So we went and got some gas, come back, put the gas in there. I don't know. I put about $5 of gas in his car, lift the hood up. He said, now my hood latch is broke. I said, well, I got some tools, so we had to take that apart. And we got the hood lifted up and fixed his hood for him. And then we gave him a jump, got him started, pulled him out of the snow. I backed up. My son hooked a chain. That old boy backed up and took off. I wanted to run him down and run over him. I thought, how could anybody, when somebody gives you food and water and air and life and gives you all these things and you don't want to stop and say thank you, what does it cost to say thank you? People don't want that. They don't glorify God, and they don't give thanks to God. But he says, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And they changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like unto the on the corruptible man and bird and four-footed beast and creeping things. Isn't it something that men, again, I've told about a lady in India. I was trying to use the telephone in this place, and she was out in the street, and she was bowed down looking up like that, and she would spin around like this, and then she'd do that again, and she would lay down on the ground, and she'd get up, and she was crying. And I thought maybe somebody had died that she loved or something serious. So I went out there to her, took my translator, and I said, would you ask this lady what's happened? Maybe we can help her, give her some comfort, or say something to her to soothe her mind. And so we asked what's wrong. She said, nothing's wrong. Well, I said, well, what are you crying about? She said, I'm worshiping the sun god, and I'm burning up doing it. I said, are you kidding me? She was worshiping the sun. But you see what people do. We just don't want to face the facts that if we see God, we're going to have to give him something. And so here's a picture of people who change the glory of the incorruptible God. We try to make some kind of a God. And we're terrible at trying to be gods ourselves, and we're terrible at making gods. I could tell you all kind of stories, humorous things I have run into with going into idolatrous places and seeing people and talking to them about idolatry. But look at verse 24. What is God's response to all of this? He's made himself known. They've rejected what God made known to them. Wherefore, God gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie, and worship and serve the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. For this cause, God gave them up to vile affections. For even their women did change their natural use of that which is against nature. Now notice, he helps us see three times he's going to tell us that God's made himself known, and men suppress that knowledge. And so what does God do when they do that? God says, okay, you want to go out there and try it on your own? Go out there and have at it. You know, we've done that with our children. We've let our children make my son. He saw one of these fellows had a truck that you had to have a stepladder to get up into it. You know, and he'd been working a job and made a lot of money. Dad, I got. I said, son, do you know what that thing will cost to keep it running? And I said, every time you hit a bump, you're gonna tear something up because it's not designed to be up that high in the sky. And I said, you'll spend all your money. He said, oh, Dad, I got to have it. And so I said, well, I'm telling you, you better not put your money in. And so my wife said, well, you telling me he can't do it? I said, honey, he was in college. I said, you try to tell a boy he can't do something, he'll go do it just to show you. I said, I'm not going to tell him. Well, he went and bought it. Well, he got in it, got driving about a week or two, and he kept breaking the flywheel, cracking the flywheel because it was up too high and the angle was too sharp. So he'd have to tear it apart, put a flywheel in. So after about a month or two, my wife said, why didn't you tell him that? I said, listen, he's learning a great lesson here. He kept working on that thing and sinking his money into it. And finally, he came home from college one weekend. He parked in the driveway and put a big sign on it, for sale. And my wife said, you know, and John said, Dad, I'll never do that. Matter of fact, next time you tell me something, I'm going to write it down. Well, you see what you do? You see what God is doing? He's saying, look, you want to go out there and try it and see. You think you can do it without me? You think you can make your marriage work or your life work or get on a job or get along with your neighbors or go to church and love people who get under your skin? Let me tell you, you can't do it without God. And these people understood that. And what they did was they just changed what God said. And so God said, okay, you just go ahead and try that a while. You think about the philosophers, Aristotle and Socrates and Plato, these men, Greek scholars who were trying to figure out what the meaning of life was about. And God let them try to figure it out. You know what they came up with? A big zero. They couldn't find meaning to it. And yet here is the meaning to life, you see. And so he tells us not only that, but when these people do that, look at what their morality, what happens to their morality in verse 26 again. They gave themselves over to vile affections, their own passions and their lust. Women did change their natural use. That was against nature. And likewise also men leaving their natural use with women, burning in their lust toward one another, men with men working that which is unseemly, and receive in themselves the recompense of their error which was due. So God says, okay, you want to try homosexuality out? You want to go down that road? Just go ahead on. Look at the AIDS epidemic that came into our country with the immorality and what goes on. And another fellow I met, and I think it was in England also that I met this fellow, who was a homosexual. And it just amazed me when I talked to him. I said, do you know what you're doing is not natural? He said, listen, I'm a Christian. He said, I'll have you know that what you don't understand is the word. When God says that they did that which is against nature, he said, God made me a homosexual, so it's natural for me to want to be with another man because God made me that way. He said, now if you have sex with a man, that will be a sin because that's not your nature. He said, God made my nature homosexual, made your nature heterosexual. I said, really? I said, the only problem is the word nature there is how God made it in the beginning, what God did when he made it with its natural, the way that he made it. I said, have you looked at your body parts lately? I said, do you understand you're on the wrong side of the fence, old buddy? I said, you know, just a little common sense ought to figure, help you to figure out that God didn't naturally give you body parts for that and make you that over there. I said, that's the craziest thing ever was. I said, that's not what the word nature means. The word nature means what you have been given. That's what you are. Now, you mess your mind up, but your body tells you who you are. Just take a little inventory and you'll see who you are. And so what we see here is the writer goes on to show us the immorality. And look at our country. We're going away from God. Where are we going? We got to run somewhere. While we're running after all the loose, ungodly, immoral things people can do, it's getting worse all the time. We think we're getting smarter all the time. It looks like we're getting going the other way, I'll just say. It doesn't seem like we're getting smarter. It seems like we're losing the grip. We're worse than we were before. And we're getting worse all the time. So it's not intellectual. It's not people that are educated that are going to solve the problem. It's God, you see. It's the gospel. And so the apostle would say in verse 28, the third time now, and even as they did not like, do you hear that? As they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate, a tested and rejected mind, to do those things which are not convenient, not fitting and proper, being filled, and notice how far they will go, and that's where we're headed, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whispers or gossips, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without natural affection. That means their sense of things, they're senseless, and covenant breakers. That is, they're faithless. And without natural affection, and so here's people that are heartless. They don't have a compassion, love for even their own family. Implacable, that they're ruthless and unmerciful. So here's the picture now. Here is the roll call of the damned. Here's the roll call of the people who are going to be lost forever. And it's because God is angry. God has a wrath towards sin. And we have got to sense and see the danger, and realize that if I let myself toy and play, and I remember when I started fooling with drugs, thinking, well, I'll just smoke one marijuana, you know, just try that one time. Well, I tell you, after a few times, that got old. Had to have some hash on it. Want some opium on it as time went on. Then that's not enough now. And that's the way sin is. I don't care if it's pornography or drugs or alcohol or gossip or whatever you want to talk about. You just can't get enough of it, and it just destroys you. And the only hope that a person can have is to say, well, I've done this, and God has let me learn. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of what I'm doing. And I want to get away from it. And so here's the picture, 21 examples of things on God's list. And so verse 31 says, verse 32 says, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure and then the doom. And so that says, good people, that we can't live fast and loose with sin. And we've got to be on guard. We've got to be careful. And you've heard me tell a couple of these about a fella that I've read about. I like to tell everywhere I go and remind you, if you've heard this, about a man on the subway up in New York City, riding along in a subway with a cell phone. He went into the bathroom area and the subway rocked, and he dropped a cell phone down in the commode. And so, that's an expensive phone. So he reached down in the commode to get it out. And it went down further. And so he got in there front. He got an arm hung in that commode. Started shouting for the conductor. And they came and had to stop the train. Because that man, and they had to come in there and cut that commode in two. And so when they got him out of there, they asked him why he did it. He said, well, I dropped my phone down in there. And it was valuable and had to have it. And they said, don't you know you cost New York City $1.5 million? We had to stop the subways up that way and the subways this way, stop the trains coming that way. People were knocked off. We had to pay fees for people to go other places. Your sin cost everybody something. Now, you know, if we think we can do something and not cost the church and our family and people we love and care about, we're hurting them. But let me tell you what we're really doing. We're breaking the heart of God. He doesn't want us to be that way. And so let's take sin serious. And let's look at this world and see. Don't say, well, where is God? Listen, God's at work. He's letting us learn what we do on our own. And that's why he's letting us see the cost of what it does. If you're here this morning and you've never obeyed the gospel, can you see why the gospel calls you? The gospel is a mind-changing book. Can you see these people, their mind? They put this, I dismissed it from their mind. If you take this and put it in your mind and start letting it, I know I told you about the lady I talked to, I think it was again in England in the big park there in London. She was sitting down with her fingers and knees crossed and her legs back, and she hum. And I tapped on her and she just hum. She didn't even feel me. I said, ma'am, are you there? Hello. And she opened her eyes up and I said, what are you doing? She said, I'm trying to get in touch with myself. She said, I'm trying to figure out where I am and get in touch with me. I said, really? I said, well, I'll tell you what, you're sitting right there. I can see you. And I said, you're not in touch for sure. But I said, as long as you sit there and just hum like that. She said, I'm humming these holy vows. I said, well, I'm going to tell you will never get in beyond yourself as long as you sit there with your eyes closed and hum. I said, if you want to get in touch with who you are, you need to get a hold of somebody who knows more about it than you do. And I said, God has given you something that can transform your mind. So transcendental meditation will just keep you fumbling around in your own empty thimble there. I said, you need to put something inside the thimble. You need to put this inside your mind and start thinking beyond and above yourself and see that there is a God who's trying to tell you how to live and what to do and what's important. And what is serious, sin is serious business. And so after I finished that, she just said, And so I made no impression at all. But if you're here this morning, can you see why you need to come? The gospel is the power. It gives life meaning, purpose, direction, a cause for living, a message to open your mind up to and submit yourself to. If you hear, need to respond in any way, once you come to sing the song, encourage you.
All things are ready.
Come to the feast. Come for the noble now.